So, Sarupriya?
Yes, Master.
Have I met any of these people last time I was here? I think so. I don't know. The last time I spoke was on your other flat.
Yes.
Quite some time. Mm-hmm.
That was almost 3 years back.
Yes, that long ago. Yeah. Very interesting. Everyone's here. Business? School? But what brings everyone to Moscow? The land of opportunity, huh? Not an easy place for all of you, I'm sure. The temple must be like a haven. So, I guess I'll speak a little bit from Bhagavad Gita. I can just pick a verse, is that okay?
Yeah, anyway.
Okay. So, Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 9, text 26, a very popular verse. Patram pushpam padam doyam yomi bhaktya prayachchati taraham bhakti paritam ashnami payatatmana. If one offers me with love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I will accept it. Purport. For the intelligent person, it is essential to be in Krishna consciousness, engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, in order to achieve a permanent, blissful abode for eternal happiness. The process of achieving such a marvelous result is very easy and can be attempted even by the poorest of the poor without any kind of qualification. The only qualification required in this connection is to be a pure devotee of the Lord. It does not matter what one is or where one is situated, even in Moscow. The process is so easy that even a leaf or a little water or fruit can be offered to the Supreme Lord in genuine love, and the Lord will be pleased to accept it. No one, therefore, can be barred from Krishna consciousness because it is so easy and universal. Who is such a fool that he does not want to be Krishna conscious by this simple method and thus attain the highest perfectional life of eternity, bliss, and knowledge? Krishna wants only loving service and nothing more. Krishna accepts even a little flower from his pure devotee. He does not want any kind of offering from a non-devotee. He is not in need of anything from anyone because he is self-sufficient. And yet he accepts the offering of his devotee in an exchange of love and affection. To develop Krishna consciousness is the highest perfection of life. Bhakti is mentioned twice in this verse in order to declare more emphatically that bhakti, or devotional service, is the only means to approach Krishna. No other condition, such as becoming a Brahmin, a learned scholar, a very rich man, or a great philosopher, can induce Krishna to accept some offering. Without the basic principle of bhakti, nothing can induce the Lord to agree to accept anything from anyone. Bhakti is never causal. The process is eternal. It is direct action and service to the absolute whole. There's more, but I'll stop here for now. I'll speak a little bit. Om Agyana Devarandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshu Unminitamnina Tasmai Shri Guruve Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitamnina Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamara Tisapatantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Matapadakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavasya Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raganatam Tam Jivam Sadvaitam Savatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Sacha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Bhima Bandho Jukhatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tata Kanshana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Suti Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Anshaka Patrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanayo Vaishna Vyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Yadvaita Gadadha Shivasiri Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Patram pushpam balam doyam yome bhaktya pariyashati taraham bhakti paritam ashnami paritatmanah. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept. That's right, no translation, huh? New phenomena for me. So, very important verse from Bhagavad Gita. Many times quoted by Srila Prabhupada to emphasize the importance of bhakti in the performance of all of one's activities. Everyone is always trying to make some effort to please someone. And here, Krishna is establishing what is the means by which he can be pleased. Prabhupada explains in the purport, it's not by becoming a great Brahmin or a learned scholar, or a rich man, or a great philosopher, that one can induce Krishna to accept some offering. What is it that attracts Krishna to accept? Is...
Oh no, please.
I very much need air. My coughing is not from the window. It's just a natural course of events that takes place as years pass by. If we want Krishna to accept something that we offer to him, it is not by being a Brahmin or a scholar or a rich man that Krishna will accept it. First of all, of course, Krishna is not controlled, is not bound to accept anything from anyone. A person who is attached, then by the nature of his attachment, he's controlled by his attachments. He's like a person maybe very much attached to wealth. So if he's very attached to wealth, if somebody will wave some money in his face, he can be manipulated. Right? Anything. Anything we may be attached to. If we're attached to wealth, if we're attached to women, person is very much attached to women, he can be manipulated by a woman. Right? Because he wants some, extract some pleasure. So he's controlled by his attachments. But Krishna cannot be controlled because, of course, he's completely transcendental to anything that one could possibly offer in the way of wealth or in the way of beauty, in the way of strength or knowledge. None of these things, as Prahlad Maharaj explains in the Bhagavatam, none of these things can actually attract Krishna's attention. He said, my dear friends, O sons of demons, you cannot please the Supreme Personality of God. Even if you become an expert Brahmin, see? Is it the window? You cannot please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if you become an expert Brahmin, you become advanced in knowledge or in etiquette or vast learning. None of these qualifications can awaken the pleasure of the Lord, nor by austerities, nor by accepting vows, nor by chastity, nor by great sacrifices can one please Krishna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is pleased only when one has unflinching unalloyed devotion to Him. Without sincere devotional service, everything else is simply a show. So, Prahlad Maharaj, being a great bhakti himself, and who was demonstrated by his own devotion, his ability to actually evoke the Lord to appear on the strength of his love for the Lord. He's speaking to his classmates and revealing that if you want to attract Krishna's attention, even if you're a very expert Brahmin, even if you're a learned scholar, even if you perform great austerities, these things will not awaken the Lord's pleasure. If one wants to actually capture the attention of the Lord, because the Lord, as we explained, he's not controlled by these things. He has no need, as Prabhupada explains here in the purport. He says that the Lord is not in need of anything from anyone because he's self-sufficient. Yet he accepts the offering of his devotee for what reason? In exchange of love and affection. To reciprocate, he accepts the offering. Why? Because what is a devotee? What does a devotee want to do? The devotee is the one who actually wants to awaken the pleasure of the Lord. The devotee is one who wants to give pleasure. By nature, we want to give pleasure to somebody. All of these emotions, these desires that we experience in our day-to-day life, they're actually all, they're genuine, but in this world, of course, they've been perverted in the form of trying to please someone independent from Krishna. We have a desire to give pleasure to friends, to families, to society. But it's, as Prabhupada explains, that is simply the perverted form of our natural propensity to actually want to please Krishna. What pleases Krishna, though, is here explained, is that when one actually has love. Patram pushpam palam. And Prabhupada says, the word bhakti is used twice in this verse to emphasize that without love, without devotional service, you won't get Krishna's attention. When he says it's a show, it means that although you may be trying to capture the attention of the Lord, he's not looking. He's not interested in these things. These are insignificant to him, whatever we may offer. We may offer grand millions of dollars. We may offer our beauty. We may offer so much. But if it's offered with a motivation to get something in return, there's no love there. He actually wants something else. In the Bhagavatam, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that that my devotee engages in my devotional service, and at the same time he wants the opulence of material enjoyment. He's like a fool who willingly gives up nectar to drink poison. He says, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead I shall induce him to take shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget. And in the Bhagavatam, one verse from the fifth canto is quoted in reference in this connection, that when a devotee approaches the Lord for the fulfillment of such desires, the Lord will satisfy his desires in such a way that the devotee will not come back and ask again. Very expert. The Lord knows. Of course, this is for the devotee. He may not be pure devotee. There are different categories of devotees. There's the pure, unalloyed devotee whose characteristics we are describing, that Nayam sukapo bhagavam dehinam gopika sutta gyaninam chatma bhutanam yata bhakti matam iha. That in the Bhagavatam it is stated that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, he's accessible by those who are engaged in spontaneous, unalloyed devotional service to him. But he's not easily accessible. He cannot be approached. Nobody can even approach him. What to speak? You know, we want to ask him for something. We can't even get his attention. Cannot be approached by those who are engaged in mental speculation, those who are engaged in austerities and penances, those who are identified with a gross physical material body. Can never be approached by them. But what is it that the Lord will notice? The Lord will notice if one has some desire that is there within the heart of every living being, of course, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, Sajikabunoi, the pure love of Krishna is there within the heart, but it's covered. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajikabunoi Shavanadi Sutchita Kori Udoi. The pure love of Krishna is eternally situated within the heart of every living being. It doesn't come from any other source. When a living entity hears about Krishna, then what happens when he hears from the right source, that love which is there, lying dormant, is awakened. It gradually becomes manifest. But it's there in everyone. But now in our conditional state, it's covered. And therefore, as we explained in the beginning, that pure love is perverted to be reflected in the form of love, so-called love, for this temporary physical material world. Therefore, the recommended process is that we have to revert back to our original state by dovetailing all that we have. Krishna says, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as austerities that you perform, do it for me. When we actually offer it back to Krishna, then although Krishna doesn't need it, which as we explained here, that Prabhupada explained, is that Krishna doesn't need anything. He doesn't even need our love. He's self-sufficient. Self-sufficient means he doesn't need anything, doesn't need anyone. But, and he's fully atmaram, he's fully self-satisfied. But what increases his pleasure even more and more is that he likes to give pleasure to his devotees. We exist for that reason. Although the Lord can joy by himself, but actually we exist to increase the, because we talk about the ever-increasing pleasure of the Lord, the nature of Ananda is ever-increasing. So the Lord's pleasure is also ever-increasing. Where does he derive this pleasure? Not from this material world. He doesn't derive pleasure from anything in this material world. He has no interest in anything in this material world. He's completely aloof. He has no connection with matter. Etad ishanam ishasya prakritisto yata gunai. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead, actually, he has no connection with these material qualities, material world. He's not controlled, none of these things has no connection. But similarly, the devotees who have taken shelter of him also, they will never become contaminated by these material qualities. Also in Bhagavad Gita, what is that verse? In the Bhagavad Gita, namam kamani limpanti namam kama pale spriha iti mam yobi janati kama bhyanasa bhajate. Krishna says, there's no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. I'm not looking for anything. When Krishna comes to this world, he's not looking for some worldly fruits, like we may go to some foreign land to try to extract some fruits. But when Krishna comes, descends to the material world, he has no interest here. He's not in the form of material fruits. He comes primarily Paritanaya Sadunam because his devotees are here. Why did he appear before Prahlad Maharaj, his Lord Nrisimhadev? Because Prahlad. Because Prahlad's devotion. He appeared because of the devotion of Prahlad. So it was the devotion that invoked the Lord to appear. He's very much inclined to come to that place where his devotees, Naham Tishtami Vakunte Yogi Nam Vidyeshiva, Tata Tishtami Nada Yatra Gayanti Madhbhakta. Krishna says, "Oh Narada, I'm not found in the Vaikuntha planets, nor will you find me in the hearts of yogis. But I go to that place. Where will you find me? I go to that place wherever my devotees are chanting my glories. That's where you'll find me. Try and look me someplace else, you won't find me. You'll never find me. But where my devotees are chanting my glories, why? Because the devotee who's chanting the glories of the Lord, he invokes the presence of the Lord by his recitation of the pastimes and by his chanting of the holy name of the Lord. He invokes the Lord's presence in his name. Therefore, when Krishna comes to this world, it's not like he comes to collect something material, but he's attracted by the love. Just like when Lord Chaitanya appeared, it's described one of the reasons why Lord Chaitanya appeared is by the prayers of Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya was praying, offering Ganges water and Tulsi to Shalagram. He was praying for the Lord to please descend. Only the Lord himself can possibly come to alleviate the symptoms of this age of Kali Yuga. And the Lord, hearing the prayer of his devotee, he appeared, invoked by that intense prayer of the devotee. So that's, therefore Krishna says, Namam kamani limpati name kama palesh bihai. He says, there's no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for any fruits of action. I do not have to work. I do not have to, I don't need anything in order to become satisfied from this material world. He's self-sufficient. He has everything. But in order to increase his pleasure, he's very anxious to satisfy his devotees. That's what increases his pleasure more than anything else. In other words, the Lord is controlled by the internal potency, not by the external potency. Although the Lord has no material attachments, certainly he's transcendental and not attached, but still he can be controlled by the Hladini potency, which is his internal pleasure potency. And that Hladini potency, of course, is manifest in devotional service. That is where that power to control Krishna comes. Just as Prabhupada also says here, that no other condition, such as becoming a Brahmin, a learned scholar, a very rich man, a great philosopher, can induce Krishna to accept some offering. Without the basic principle of bhakti, nothing can induce the Lord to agree to accept anything from anyone. Bhakti is never causal. The process is eternal. It is direct action and service to the absolute whole. In other words, there is, it's described here that bhakti is never causal. Bhakti attracts the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And bhakti also is described to be causeless. There's no other cause for bhakti other than bhakti itself. So how does bhakti manifest in our hearts? As we said, bhakti is there, but it is manifest by the mercy of a devotee. But why is that devotee impelled to give bhakti? It's due to the bhakti in his heart. We may say we get bhakti by the mercy of a devotee, just as we explained before, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sanji Kabunoi, that when one hears about Krishna from the devotee, then that bhakti is awakened. So one hears from the devotee, but what is compelling that devotee to speak about Krishna? It's the bhakti in his heart that's compelling him to speak about Krishna. Bhakti gives bhakti. It means it's causeless. You can't get bhakti either by performing so many pious activities. For millions of births, one will not be able to obtain bhakti in that way. Millions of births of pious activities. And what is that verse? It's Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya. Ramananda Roy was saying that even after accumulating pious activities for many births, one will not be able to get Krishna, but Krishna can only be purchased by paying one price. He says that one price is the intense greed to have it, to have bhakti. He says whenever one sees it, he should immediately purchase it without delay. There's no other way to get it. We may perform so much punya, so much, but actually, we may get elevation to heavenly planets. Krishna says, Yami mam pushpatam vacham, pavadanshiva pashita, vedavadarata partha, nanyarastini vaduna. Men of small knowledge, they're very much attracted to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various sacrifices for elevation to the heavenly planets, resulting in good birth, power, and so forth. Being attracted to sense gratification and opulent life, they think there's nothing more than this. They think that actually this is the goal of the Vedas, although Krishna very clearly states that all the purposes of a small pond can be served by the great reservoirs of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served by one who knows the purpose behind them. And what is that purpose? Krishna says, Vedaischa sai vairaham eva veda, Vedanta kud eva, well, what is it? Vedanta vid, Veda vid eva chaham. That by all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta and I am the knower of the Vedas. The goal of all the Vedas is not elevation to heavenly planets, resulting good birth, power, wealth, so forth. Persons who are attached to the flowery words, it's described that these flowery words of the Vedas, they're like poisonous flowers in a tree. They look very attractive, but actually they're poisonous. So in the same way, persons who are attracted to perform sacrifices simply for elevation to heavenly planets, resulting in birth, power, wealth, they think there's nothing more, but actually they don't know the actual goal of the Vedas, which is to know Krishna. And when one knows Krishna, Hamsa Vasya Pabhava Matak Savam Pavatite Iti Mam Vajati Mam Buddha Bhava Samavata, Krishna says, I am the source of the material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly, they'll engage in my devotional service and they'll worship me with all of their hearts. Many times people say, oh, I know Krishna. I know Krishna. I've heard this before. But Krishna says, yes, if you know me, then you'll engage fully. Those who know me, they worship me with all of their hearts. They give everything to me, those who know me. If one really knows Krishna, he can't help but give everything to Krishna. Because Krishna is so wonderful, so beautiful, so attractive. And his most attractive quality is his feature, his bhakta vatsal. That's the greatest ornament, jewel, the qualities of the Supreme Lord. Bhakta vatsal means that he simply wants to give pleasure to the devotee. He's so great, the greatest person, but he's so great, but he's so much inclined simply to become a servant of his devotee. He'll drive the chariot of Arjuna and become completely submissive to his command. He becomes submissive. This is also explained in the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto. What is that verse? Evam Sandarshita. Evam sasandarshita hyayam. I can't remember the Sanskrit. I remember the English though. This material universe with all of its, oh Maharaj Pariksit, this material universe with all of its great exalted demigods like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Indra, is completely controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet the Lord has one transcendental quality, that he is controlled by his devotees. Sukadeva Goswami said this to Pariksit Maharaj in reference to Mother Jasoda's control of Krishna when she bound Krishna with the ropes of affection and love. That although Krishna, he's the greatest person, no one can conquer him, yet he can be conquered by love. He can be controlled by love. He becomes completely subservient, submissive, by the love which is manifest. Nasadiyati mam yogo yasankya dharma udava. Krishna says to Udava that the unalloyed devotional service which is read into me by my devotees brings me under my control. So I cannot be thus controlled by sankhya yoga, nor by study of the Vedas, nor by sacrifices. None of these things can bring me under. Only devotion to Krishna. So, therefore, in this verse of the Bhagavad Gita, the emphasis is being made that if one wants to satisfy the Supreme Lord, if one wants to please Him, then that ingredient of bhakti must be present. We must want to do it for Him. Not for any other purpose except to please Him. And how does the Lord reciprocate with such a desire? The Lord, of course, is very much inclined to reciprocate with His devotee. But what is the greatest? As we said, Bhakti Vatsal, one who's inclined to give pleasure to his devotee. What gives the devotee the greatest pleasure is when the Lord accepts the offering of his devotee. That's the perfection. Not only accepts it, you know, because all of our efforts to do something for somebody, isn't it? When we try to do something for somebody, all of our efforts is actually, we really want to please Him, but it's so hard to please everyone in this world. We may do so much for somebody. Sometimes we get very frustrated also. I do so much for you, but still you're not pleased. Right? Sometimes so many marriages, they're just completely destroyed on this basis. You think, that's all I do is I give, but it's so hard to please. But actually, the Lord can become pleased with the smallest amount. He says, just a little water, and I'll be pleased. You can just give me a little water, and I'll be so pleased. I'll accept it. Give me a little fruit, a little flower. The Lord's pleasure is, as we said, is beyond the pleasures of this material world. The Lord derives pleasure only from the internal potency, and that pleasure is ananda. That pleasure is ever-increasing. It is the highest pleasure. That pleasure, of course, has no beginning and no end, and is ever-increasing. And that pleasure is also available to the devotee who actually offers something to please the Lord. With love and affection, with love and devotion. The Lord shares that pleasure with His devotee. Even just the smallest amount of service, actually, is recognized by the Lord. So, the Lord reciprocates by being pleased with the offering of His devotee. And He bestows upon that devotee, what does He give in return? The Lord is very much inclined to give that devotee devotional service to Him. As explained in the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni says to Yudhishthira Maharaj, he says that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what is it? No, wait a minute. He says that Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, is your guru, your God, He's the head of your family. He said, but oh, Yudhishthira Maharaj, I can also see that He becomes your servant and order carrier. Therefore, I can see that you receive bhakti, you have devotion. He says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead will give liberation to one very easily, but He doesn't give bhakti so easily. Because when He gives somebody pure devotion, when He gives somebody bhakti, He also gives Himself. Therefore, when one actually has devotion to the Lord feels, He says, as you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. For those who actually have devotion, what do they get? They get Krishna. Krishna becomes completely subservient to the desires of His devotees and satisfies all of His devotees' desires beyond His expectation. Just even the smallest, just like Sudan Brahmins, simply a few grains of rice. Right? A few grains of rice He carried in His cloth bag over His shoulder. Not only that, but He didn't even offer it. He carried it with Him. His wife said, here, take this to Krishna. But His wife said, no, you have to go ask for Krishna for some. You're impoverished. Look at you. You're so lean. Nothing to eat. You should go to your friend, your classmate Krishna, and you should ask for him. He can fulfill your needs. Sudan Brahman was not interested, but because of the persistence of his wife, he said, I'll go. She went, she collected a few grains of rice, and they had nothing to offer Krishna. Sudan put it in a little cloth, and then went the whole way simply meditating on his ecstasy, his great opportunity to see Krishna. He was absorbed in simply glorification of the Lord, meditation on the form of the Lord, beautiful features of the Lord. And when he entered into the palace, Krishna was there with Rukmini Devi, and he did actually. The Lord received Sudam Brahman, put him on his bedstead, offered arti, showing the great respect he has for his devotee. So much was there in that particular exchange. Sudam Brahman forgot to even ask. The Lord said, "What have you brought for me?" Sudam Brahman was embarrassed. He was ashamed. "I have nothing." The Lord snatched it, took it away. And then it's described in Bhagavatam that Rukmini, she grabbed Krishna's arm and says, "No, don't." He says, "If you take this, and then I'll be obliged to give him so much fortune." If you take, because she's completely submissive to the Lord. And but Krishna said no, and immediately he wanted to take that rice. And he said, "You should know that this small quantity of chipped rice will be sufficient to satisfy the entire creation." Even though didn't offer it, but the Lord wants it. He takes, snatches it from the hands of his devotee. Now that's only, that can only be done with somebody who actually has real devotion. Without even offering. What to speak of? Without even offering, but relishing it so much that the Lord was saying, "This is so pleasing to me that the entire creation will be satisfied by these morsels of chipped rice." Sudam Brahman was so overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And then after some exchange, he left. And then he never asked for anything. But when he returned, everything was there. Beyond his expectations. So there's also a similar pastime actually in Chaitanya Bhagavat of the Brahmin Shuklambara, who was also a beggar. And it's described how Shuklambara used to go from door to door begging a few grains of rice from the homes of even the most impoverished people. And it's described that although he would beg a few grains of rice, and he would maybe collect maybe 10, 20 grains of rice a day. But he was so satisfied that he never even knew the meaning of the word poverty. Some may say, how can one not know the meaning of the word poverty and live in poverty? It's because he was so satisfied. If someone's so satisfied, how can he understand what does poverty mean? Can't understand. So fully satisfied. And so he was also, he would carry on his shoulder in the same way this rice. And one time in Kirtan, the Lord was very much attracted and stood before the Shuklambara Brahmachari. In the same way as he did with Sudam Brahman, he snatched the rice. Shuklambara begged him, "Please don't, this is not fit for your eating." And it explains in the Chaitanya Bhagavad actually that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants to accept something from his devotee, then even if the devotee does not offer it with suitable mudras and mantras, the Lord smashes all of these mudras and mantras, because ordinarily, according to the Vedas, if one wants to get the Lord to accept, he must offer it with the proper mudras and mantras for the Lord to accept. He says, but when he personally comes to the doorstep of his devotee, he smashes all these mudras and mantras into powder. Because the Lord is captivated only by one quality, and that is the love. In the same way he took the grains of rice from Shuklambara. One other time also, he told Shuklambara, he says, "I'm very eager. I want to eat food which is directly offered to Krishna from your hands." And Shuklambara is very, very humble. Very humble. He's extremely humble. He says, "Actually, oh Lord," he says, "I'm very fallen. I'm simply a beggar. People ridicule me. They mock me in so many different ways. I have no quality. I'm lower than a worm in stool. How can I possibly cook something with my hands and you accept it?" And he said, "Please don't play games with me. Why are you trying to trick me in this way?" And Lord Chaitanya said, he said, "No, I'm not playing games." He said, "I'm very eager to accept food from the hands of my devotees. Please, now you go home and you prepare something, and I'll come back at midday and I will eat that food which you have offered. Shukambara was still, he was afraid. He approached all the Vaishnavas present. He said, "What should I do? I'm afraid. I don't want to offer anything to Lord. I'm not qualified to offer anything to him." And the devotees told Shukambara, he says, "It is the nature of the Supreme Lord." He says, "Actually, this, you should understand that this personality before you is not different than the Supreme Lord, and it is his nature. He likes to accept food from the hands of his devotees." He says, "This Supreme Lord, he went and he accepted, begged food from the home of Vidura. What was Vidura's qualification?" Just like there's a verse also in Chaitanya Mangala, which described what was Vidura's qualification, what was Ugrasena's valor, how old was Dhruva, what was Kubja's beauty. And what was Sudan Brahman's wealth? He said, from these examples, we can understand that Lord Madhava, he's only attracted to the qualities of his devotees. He's not attracted to anything external. So they were telling all this to Sukumbhara. He said, "Still, if you're afraid," he said, "then go home and cook, but don't touch anything with your hands." So Sukumbhara immediately accepted this with great enthusiasm. He went home very enthusiastically, chanting the names of the Lord, took bath, and began preparing wonderful rice with ghee. And it's described that actually as he began cooking these preparations, chanting and meditating on the pleasure of the Lord, then the goddess of fortune herself appeared in the kitchen, and she made everything taste so sweeter than nectar. And then later that day, Lord Chaitanya, he came after taking his bath in the Ganga. He came to the home of Shukambhara. He entered into the home and he looked at all the devotees present, and immediately he glanced upon everyone with his lotus eyes, and was very much satisfied to reciprocate with all the love coming from his devotees. But after glancing at everyone, then he sat down and he said, "Now I have come to accept this food from you, Shukambhara." Shukambhara brought all this wonderful food that he had prepared, and the Lord began eating it, relishing it. And he said, "Shukambhara, this rice tastes so wonderful. How is it that you've prepared such wonderful rice without even touching it with your hands?" And he said, "Friends like you, Shukambhara, are the root from which I grow." And he described it, how that actually he's nourished, that the Lord, his love is nourished by the love of his, he's so eager to accept that which is offered by the devotee with love. And Vrindavan Das Thakur describes that the sinner millionaires, they can never understand the true glory of the beggar Shukambhara. They cannot understand, because even though they may offer, but if they have no love, the Lord is not inclined to accept. The Lord is only inclined to accept something as devotee. The devotee has love. And that is what he's so pleased to accept. He says, therefore, they may ridicule, just like Shukambhara was ridiculed. People made fun of him. They say, "Oh, just look at this beggar on the streets." Those who were worshippers of the goddess Chandi, they were thinking, "This beggar living in the streets, simply begging some few grains of rice. Why aren't you worshipping Durga? Look at us. We're living in opulence. And you simply some beggar in the streets. You have nothing, some pauper." But they can never taste, they can never experience the great pleasure which is derived from having the Lord accept something which from the hands of his devotee. The greatest pleasure is experienced in the heart of the devotee, who is always anxious to simply please the Lord. And the Lord actually, by that power of his devotional service, the Lord very willingly comes to accept, even right from the hands of his devotee. What's that story? In the what's that deity outside of Puri? Is that all or not? I can't remember. This is a story of the Brahmin who told his son to prepare the offerings of food while he went to go out and beg. It was what? I can't remember the name of the deity. Somehow it slipped my mind. Is it? Alunath?
There are two stories.
stories. Very similar stories.
Uh-huh. I'll tell the story and then you tell me the deal. there was a Brahmin who was, he would, I think it was a very large community of Brahmins, and it was at one, and regularly they would rotate, that the Brahmins would go out to beg on behalf of the community. And his time to begging came up, and he was regularly offering service, seva, and making offerings to the deity. And he told his young son, he said that, while I'm away, you should make the offerings. And the son said, but I'm just simply a young boy. How can I offer something to the Lord? I don't even know the proper mantras to chant. I don't know the proper methods of making some offering. And his father said, no, simply you just go ahead. You just do it. You make some offering. And when I return, I'll resume continuing my offerings. And the father left to go begging. So the young boy, he prepared some offering and he brought it before the deity. And he said, my Lord, my father has asked me to offer this food to you. I don't know how to do it. I don't know the proper mantras. I don't know anything. But I want you to accept it. Please just simply accept this. And he prayed in this way and then he went out to play. And then when he came back, he saw that the food was still there. And he was thinking, oh, the Lord didn't accept it. And he was very pained. He was very pained by the fact that the Lord didn't accept the food. So then the next time he made an offering again, and he offered, so, my Lord, please, I know I have no qualification, but please overlook all my shortcomings, overlook everything. Please, somehow, please accept, eat this offering that I prepared for you. And then he went out, and then when he came back, he saw it was still there again. So then what awakened in his heart was a very, very intense desire. Somehow he felt that how could he be successful in fulfilling the request of his father? The Lord won't eat it. So with tears in his eyes, he began begging, please, accept. And when he came back, it was gone. So this went on for a few days. And then finally, the father, he returned from his begging. And when he came home, he was hungry. And he asked his son, he said, do you have some prasadam? But they had been fasting for 3 days because the Lord didn't leave anything for them to eat. Mother, she was very also concerned. Whereas when the Brahmin father said, what do you mean there's nothing to eat? And the boy said, no, father. He said, you asked me to offer to the Lord. And I said, you told me that just simply pray to the Lord. And I prayed to the Lord. And the Lord came and he ate all the... He came, he ate everything. He accepted. Nothing is there for us to eat. So the father said that this is impossible. How can a deity eat? Right? So he became very angry. He thought maybe the son was simply making up excuses. He was eating at his son. He was eating it himself. Or thought maybe he was giving it, feeding it to the dogs or something like that. He chastised his son. He said, okay. And he says, you prove to me that the Lord eats. And then the boy, he prepared some sweet rice, right, to offer to the Lord. And the father, Brahmin priest, he hid behind the curtain in the altar and he waited for the boy to go and make the offering. And now while the boy was making the offering, the deity was reaching down to take, and the Brahmin reached out, grabbed him, stop! You can't eat that! You're a deity! Actually, the sweet rice was still hot. I think the indigo that you see in the And that deity is there. And there were some marks on the deity where the sweet rice was burnt. The deity. And what happened is this Brahmin, he was not qualified. The Lord would not accept his offerings. And actually, I think it was a curse that took place afterwards. I think all because of this Brahmin's faithlessness, that later there was in that village, there was some curse, and I think there was some devastation of some sort. I can't remember exactly what it was. And the only one that survived was the young boy. Ketan was his name, right? Ketan. Remember the name of the deity? You don't remember the name of the deity? So anyways, this is another example of how the Lord is very, very anxious to accept food when it's really genuinely offered with love from the hands of his devotee, but not so much inclined. So Lord Chaitanya also said to Shukumbhara, he says, "You are the root from which I grow." And therefore, if we actually really want to understand the great pleasure which is experienced by the devotees engaged in devotional service, then the recommendation is given here in this verse that we should try to offer it with some love. So, okay, I spoke a lot. Any questions? Sukadeva Goswami is not different from the Supreme Lord?
No. Prabhupada is writing that Sukadeva Goswami and the Parikshit Maharaj.
Yeah.
They are playing the role of one is playing the role of spiritual master and the other one is disciple.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that I understand.
But both are in the same level.
Uh-huh.
So what does it mean? Both are in the same level? Because Sukadeva Goswami,
You're asking, is it because your question is? I thought you were saying Prabhupada is saying that Shukadeva Goswami.
Yeah, both are in the same level.
Same level. Well, they're both pure devotees of the Lord, but actually Shukadeva Goswami was playing the part of Shukadeva Goswami, and who are you saying? Pariksit. Yes. Pariksit was playing the part of the disciple. Shukadeva Goswami was playing the part of the spiritual master. But it was in order to fulfill a greater purpose. Just like Prabhupada uses the same example in reference to Arjuna. Arjuna was apparently bewildered on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, but it was to fulfill the Lord's purpose. The Lord's purpose is he wanted to speak the Bhagavad Gita, and therefore he wanted Arjuna to become his recipient for that message so that the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken and heard for the welfare of Paratunaya Sadhana Vinasha Naduskritam Dharma Sangstapranataya. So how does Lord Krishna give their principles of religion? By speaking the message of Bhagavad Gita. So in the same way, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Pariksit Maharaj was also according to the will of the Lord. Pariksit Maharaj also, according to the will of the Lord, although he was a pure devotee, why would he become offended by the Rishi, Shamik Rishi, and growling him with a snake? You know, if you would think according to characteristics of a pure devotee, a devotee will not take offense. But yet when he entered into the hermitage of Shamik Rishi, and Shamik Rishi was sitting absorbed in meditation, and not only that, but he was not even conscious of the presence of Pariksit Maharaj. Pariksit Maharaj was very disturbed because he was thinking, I've entered into the hermitage of this sage, and it is the duty of a sage to receive a guest by at least offering him a place to sit and some water. But he didn't even receive me. So he took a dead snake and he put it around the sage's neck and garlanded it. Why did he? That was all the internal potency of the Lord. So that actually, so that the Bhagavatam could be spoken. So by the will of the Lord, he uses his devotees. He used Shukadeva Goswami to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he used Pariksit Maharaj to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. They're both on the same level, both completely submissive to the will of the Lord. And by the Lord's will, the Bhagavatam was spoken through the mouth of Shukadeva Goswami. And Pariksit, of course, his being a pure devotee of the Lord, all of his questions that he asked were for the welfare of for everyone. His questions, glorious. Even in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Muniya Sada Pristaham Bhavabhya Loka Mangalam. Tat Krishna Hina Samprasna Yanatma Supersedati. Sutta Goswami says, oh sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are glorious because they relate to Lord Krishna, and therefore they are the ultimate benefit for the world, highest welfare. So in the same way, Pariksit Maharaj, he asked questions for the benefit of everyone. Being a pure devotee of the Lord, he was concerned for the welfare of everyone and didn't want to see them suffer. Therefore, all of his questions were simply aimed to elicit out of Shukadeva Goswami the pure message of Bhagavatam from the enlightenment of benefit of everyone. That they assumed this role of spiritual master and disciple. In the same way as Arjuna assumed the role as being bewildered.
Last stage of Lord Krishna's incarnation, when he is living in this world, he creates a lila by which all the yadavs, they cut themselves, they take themselves. By this lila, the last stage of his lila, and he is pierced by some arrow. What is the message that the Lord wants to give to the humankind?
Message is that the Lord satisfies everyone's desires. For the devotees, they understand that the Lord can never leave by being pierced at the foot by an arrow. That same Lord who stood on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, pierced by thousands and thousands of arrows, completely unaffected, how is it that one small, in the heel of the foot? the Lord left his body, left a body behind, being pierced in the foot by the arrow, in order to bewilder the impersonalists, those who actually want to say that actually Krishna had a material body. Therefore, he left behind a material body, so that they would think, oh yes, the Supreme Lord has a material body. That was one of the reasons why actually it's described. Of course, the Lord doesn't have a material body. He left behind his Virat Rupa. It was his universal form that he left behind. The Lord didn't appear, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ajopi Sanaviyatma Bhutanam Isharopi San. He says, although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I'm the Lord of all sentient beings, I appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. And Krishna explains that his body is Atmamayaya. He's not a material body. But he leaves behind this Virat Rupa, this universal form. And it's explained in the Bhagavatam in order to, for those who are attached to the impersonal conception, who think, just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, foolish men think that I, Krishna, was impersonal, and I have actually taken on this body. Men of small knowledge, being very foolish, they think I've accepted the material body. What is that verse? Avyaktam yaktam apana manyate mama buddhaya? What is it? Yeah, that's it. Excuse me one second. Avyaktam yaktam apanam. 724. I forgot the translation. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, was impersonal before and now have assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So he's referring to the foolish materialists, the foolish impersonalists who think that when Krishna comes to the material world, he accepts a material body. So in order to bewilder them, he left behind, and therefore he was pierced in the foot by an arrow. But he chose to use that as his means for departing from this world. You want to say something,
No, there was another... You see, when Lord Krishna, when he left the this material world, you know, all his descendants from the community from which...
the Yadu dynasty.
Yadavs.
Yeah.
You know, they fought together and finished everything.
Yes.
So but what was that message?
Their message was that because they were all connected to the Lord, they were all actually associates of the Lord, there was no other way. He was afraid that it's actually described in the explanation that's given is that they could have wreaked havoc after the disappearance of the Lord. Complete wreaked havoc. So rather than leaving them behind after the Lord's disappearance, he chose to bring them, arrange for them to... But nobody else could destroy them because they were all the associates of the Lord. Therefore, they had to destroy each other. It was all arrangement of the Lord's internal potency that they would actually get intoxicated by drinking rice wine. And of course, everything that would happen is that it was all due to the curse of the Yadu dynasty with that club, right? When it was ground up and it was thrown in the water and then the reeds grew up into bamboo shoots, and it was with those bamboo shoots that they beat each other. And then the one piece that was left, that was the piece that was fastened to the head of the arrow that the hunter, Jara, used to shoot into. And by that arrangement, that was how Krishna, that little piece was also, that was left in the, there was one little piece that wasn't ground up, that was the arrowhead. But that was the arrangement of the Lord, is that the whole Yadu dynasty should leave before him, because if he left first, they would have created havoc. And nobody else could have destroyed them, so they had to destroy each other. Of course, and they were associates, and they of the Lord. Therefore, when they leave, they simply go and they participate in the Lord's leelas. His next destination.
I add to this from Abhart some little thing to this story. After the battle of Kurukshetra, Gandhari, mother of all the sons of Dhritarashtra, she was very angry, she was very grieved, and when everybody came to the palace, to Hastinapur. She saw Krishna and she said, I'm not angry against Pandavas because they were acting according to your will. But I know, Krishna, that everything was arranged by you. And I do not curse them, but I curse your relatives. That just as my whole dynasty destroyed each other, your dynasty will also destroy everybody in your dynasty will destroy each other. And Krishna became a little bit pale and then she said, thank you very much, Mother. Because I was thinking, how is it possible to remove my dynasty from this world? Now I'm peaceful because the strength of your austerity and of your curse, my dynasty will also leave this world.
Alright. We can end here. What's next?
Prasadam.
Vision.
Yeah.
Ready?